All right. Romans 14:14. We went through, how many people remember? That was a long time ago. We went through the history of the English translation. Golly day. Mark 7:19. We can never discuss food if we didn't discuss Mark 7:19. And then because of the issue of context, of course, we had to go through Mark 7 and Matthew 15. And since people are telling us that we are a doctrine of devils, we had to deal with 1 Timothy 4. So we could dismiss that. And you can never have a discussion about food without including Peter in the sheet. Then we had to look at Romans 14 from the standpoint of Protestant Christianity. So what I did was, and I will redo here today, is we constructed the passage based on the International Critical Commentary, which is the leading commentary of Protestant Christianity for the 20th century, and I showed you their page-by-page notes, and we created the first six verses so you could sit there and go, man, is this really true? So I will show that today before we actually do the passage. And then, believe it or not, we're actually going to talk about what Romans 14 is about. I know. Hallelujah. Oh, okay. English history. Do y'all remember that with the exception of Wycliffe, we do not hold Wycliffe accountable because he was using the Latin Vulgate, but all of the other Bibles except for one had the translation of Romans 14 correct, and the one that was incorrect was fixed the next year in the next version. Still don't understand why that happened, but it's neither here nor there. The Greek word, and you'll see it later as we get in here, is not translated correctly as unclean. It's translated as common, so obviously there's a conspiracy to defraud. We'll talk more about that. Mark 7:19, the reason we discuss Mark 7:19 is while it is true that Matthew 15 and Mark 7 are discussing the same story, parallel account, there are four words at the end of Mark 7:19 which are translated in the New American Standard and the New International Version as something like, in saying this, Jesus made all meats clean. The English goes something like that. It's based on four Greek words, and what we did was we broke down why their translation is correct, okay? But we also broke down that it's not the only correct translation. I actually showed from the Greek where theirs was only one possible translation, and I showed you another one, and we spent the entire meeting going through Mark 7:19, making a case for the other translation that they don't tell you about. Then in part three, we went through line by line Mark 7 and Matthew 15 so that you could understand the story in context and see what was really going on. Plus, this was an exposure of my brain of how I think. That was fun, for me at least. I told you about 1 Timothy, we had to deal with the doctrine of demons, and then we found out it wasn't even discussing that subject. Acts 10, we talked to Peter. Remember in Mark 7 and Matthew 15, Peter was there. Yeshua explains the situation. The people don't get it. Yeshua calls the people together, huddle around. He explains it again. The people don't get it. Peter says, look, I'm representing the apostles here, the apostles-to-be, and we don't get it. Can you explain it a third time? So, if Yeshua had done away with the food laws, there was no more unclean, you cannot explain Acts 10. But even saying that, we went through Acts 10 and broke down the significant verses that make the case for the fact that Peter understood what this was really talking about. So, you know, we had to do it. We just had to do it. Romans 14, the International Critical Commentary Version. This is so you can understand the context of what we're dealing with. That's what this is about. Here we go. I had to include chapter 15, verse 1 and verse 4 so that you would be able to have those in your mind. Because remember, this is a letter, okay? Paul concludes, we then that are strong. All right, first thing right there. It sounds like Paul is saying that he's strong, ought to bear the infirmities of the weak. For whatsoever was written in the Torah that has now been done away with was written to instruct us that we might continue to have hope. You know, I've often struggled with that verse. I wanted you to see verse 1 and verse 4 so that you could appreciate verses 1 through 6. Later on, somebody can explain this verse to me. All right, here we go. One more thing. this Torah that's been done away with, I just wanted to mention that in chapter 13, it hadn't been done away with yet. So I guess it got done away with between the end of chapter 13 and the beginning of chapter 14. Maybe it came back at the end of 14, back in 15. I don't know. I need to probably get a chart out for that. But looking at 13:8, owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loveth another is fulfilled the law. Now look at how does Paul define loving your neighbor? Don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't steal, don't bear false witness. This is KJV, don't covet. And if there be any other commandment, well, gosh, if there be any other commandment that would relate from where? Well, where would I get other commandments? Oh, you mean I should use the text that these previous commandments came from? Oh, well, I thought that was done away with. You see the inconsistency here? So right here, Paul is talking about other commandments that relate to love. They're all defined. It's called Torah. And they're summed. All right, and the last one was love is the fulfilling of the law. So you know that. Okay, so let's, this is what I was just saying, that the commandments that have been done away, they're in the done away law. So this is a problem for us because the law is done away. We can't even tell which chapter of the law is in effect and which chapter of the law is done away with. That's always been a struggle for me. So here we go, verse 1. To those that feel literal observance of Torah is a response to the grace of God through Christ, receive. But do not discuss commandments found in Torah with them. This is Romans 14:1. For those who recognize that the Torah was nailed to the cross know that they can eat anything. But those who still feel that the Torah is in effect as a rule of life for the believer today eat only vegetables. That's me. Let not those who are free to eat anything despise and make light of those who still follow the Torah. And let not those who still follow the food laws as found in the Torah criticize those who eat anything, for God has received every one. Does this feel politically correct to you? Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. Oh, the mystery. Verse 5 contains the mystery. You've heard Paul speak about the mystery, right? I even put this in the homework, right? The mystery. How many people found it? Colossians 1:26. Even the mystery, which has been hid from ages and from generations. Well, I'm going to tell you what the real mystery is. It's called the mystery of consistency. And it makes me wonder about some of these translators, where's their consistency? That's a mystery to me, I'll tell you that. Here is where their argument crumbles right down to the floor. Protestant Christianity recognizes that the Sabbath has its emphasis in creation. Then when Yeshua came and fulfilled what he fulfilled, the emphasis shifted from creation to redemption. So we're not looking at creation anymore, we're looking at redemption. So what is the day that has been established to emphasize redemption? Sunday. We've got these two things here. We've got the Sabbath emphasizes creation, and Sunday emphasizes redemption. Protestant Christian scholarship comes to this passage in Romans 14, verse 5. And this causes them a problem that they don't even realize. And I'll tell you why. It says, one esteems the Sabbath above other days. Now think about that. Stop right there and don't read the rest of the verse. Just think about that sentence. One esteems the Sabbath above other days. All right, so if you had to just take a guess off the top of your head, who do you think in the first century that might be talking about? Yeah, just take a guess. Look at this next part. Another esteems every day the same. So, conflict number one. I thought Sunday was the big day. If we're the group who are esteeming the Sabbath above other days, and you guys are esteeming Sunday because that's the emphasis of redemption, who are these people that are esteeming every day the same? I'm confused. But that's not their worst problem. Their worst problem is Ephesians 2:15, where Paul states that the law contained in ordinances was abolished. The emphasis of the Sabbath creation was abolished and set aside to be replaced with Sunday's emphasis for redemption. So it's not, do not argue with these people because whatever they want to do is okay. You can't go there. It's either been taken away or it hasn't. You can't have it both ways. Look at the rest of this verse. Let everyone be fully persuaded in his own mind. So what does that tell me? That means that I can just go, ding, 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 ding. Okay, whatever I decide is okay with God. But wait, I thought that I had to recognize Sunday now because of redemption. So it can't be whatever I think, whatever I'm persuaded to believe, because I think all the days are the same. So I don't recognize Sunday. You see the inconsistency here? That boat don't float. It just don't. There's no way you can get there. So I just wanted you to understand what the mystery was of this interpretation. When you actually put the pieces in the puzzle, you don't get a picture. Let's continue. He that has a high regard for the Sabbath regards it unto the Lord. He that dislikes the Sabbath dislikes it unto the Lord. Wow. He that eats anything eats unto the Lord, for he gives God thanks. He that eats only vegetables does so to the Lord and gives God thanks. Does anybody besides me have a problem with this translation? Whew. Man, I'm telling you what. So let's get to what it's really talking about. First, the power of the conscience. As we all know, sin is defined in Torah, but not completely. And this is the issue. We might be able to go back and find a place to drag it out of the Torah. I haven't found it yet. Of course, I haven't looked real hard either. But the power of the conscience is a mighty tool, and Paul was addressing this multiple places, not just Romans. So let me show you where I'm going. Two, Paul is addressing judging all things. And if you don't judge properly, if you make a false judgment, an incorrect judgment, that is a problem. Paul addresses it. And three, food and what can happen to it prior to it being eaten. Now, the reason I put that in the gray text there is because I want you to understand that I recognize food as being defined in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and to the best of my knowledge, it hasn't been redefined in the New Testament. Therefore, I'm going to operate on the definition that I find in Torah. But some people thought that some stuff could happen to food before it was eaten, and that's an issue, and I will show you. First, this is the conscience passages. Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. Now, we may not have the problem they had in the first century. We got our own set, so we're good there. I have retranslated this from the Greek to emphasize certain points. Let us no longer have the habit of criticizing one another. Determine rather that no man put an obstacle or provide an opportunity for your brother to be enticed to sin. Slightly different twist. The reason I have put that is because of where I'm going with this teaching. Conscience. 14. I know and am persuaded by Adonai Yeshua that there's nothing unclean of itself, but to him that thinks anything to be unclean, to him it is unclean. Of course, we know that is incorrect. Correct? Yes. We'll dump unclean. We'll replace it with the correct Greek word translated into English, that there is nothing common of itself. But to him that thinks anything to be common, to him it is common. You need to grasp that. See, when we looked at the English translations, why did I take an entire session to show you every English translation up to the KJV in the Middle English from the Greek, the German, and the Latin, so that you would know what the history of translation was and before an agenda was created, that they had the truth. But once they moved away from the truth and wanted to emphasize getting rid of Torah, this became the poster child verse to change, to make it look like there's nothing unclean. So then what does Paul say? I'm persuaded by Yeshua. There's nothing unclean. Well, where are you going to go? You're going to go to Mark 7:19 because that is the only place where it is mistranslated that he has made everything clean. So you take those two, you hook them together, and what do you got? A disaster. I have put it back as common. 15, if thy brother be grieved with thy meat, now walkest thou not charitably. Destroy not him with thy meat for whom Christ died. I think that's the KJV. This will be my Greek. But if your brother be grieved by your food choice, you have stopped walking in love. Do not put him on the path to ruin with your food choices, for Christ died for him too. Continuing. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace and things wherewith one may edify another. Shouldn't even have to say that. My Greek. Accordingly, therefore, let us pursue peace and those things that edify one another. For meat destroy not the work of God. All things indeed are pure, but it is evil for that man who eateth with offense. My Greek translation. Do not destroy the work of God with your food choices. All food is clean, that is, nothing is common or can become common. But it's wrong for the strong brother to knowingly eat that which will cause a stumbling block for his brother. Now, you're going to have to associate this back to the first century because I don't think this is really a major messianic issue of food becoming common because Gentiles have cooked it. Don't think that's a big issue today. But I'm doing this because we have to be able to disarm the attack that's against us by using Romans 14 as the destroy the law all chapter. That's why I'm doing this. It is good to not do anything which would make a brother stumble. My Greek, we're continuing these last three verses. Have faith. Have it to yourself. Be happy that your conscience does not condemn your actions. I'm really going to tell you what this means in a second. And the last verse, for if the weak, in spite of his doubt, because he thinks he's not supposed to eat, he's doubting. If the weak, in spite of his doubt, eats, he stands condemned because he eats while believing he shouldn't. Think conscience. And if he believes he shouldn't do something, then he has sinned. This is outside of Torah, as best as I know. So Torah defines sin. It just don't define all of it. So the conscience is a major role player here. And if y'all disagree, you can see me afterwards. But this is how I'm understanding this, that if a person thinks they shouldn't do something, although they see somebody else over here doing it, and they go, I don't think you should do that, and then they go do it, I think that's a problem. Here's what my commentary is on what Paul is trying to say. When that person goes ahead and eats something that he thinks is wrong to eat, okay, he is coming from a situation where the theological education system of the first century is, if this takes place, that food is now common, you can't eat it. You become ritually defiled. So this is how he's seeing it. He's saying, I can't eat that. That's wrong. It's wrong to eat that. And he sees this person over here, this other believer, who eats it with no problem. You know, it goes right into the pagan temple and sits down and has a burger. Okay. And he's like, man. My commentary is when he then does something against his conscience, it blunts the conscience. And here is the end result. And here's why I believe the warning of Paul exists. So that doing what you think is wrong becomes easier next time. So now what happens is it's not in itself, in that instance, it's not a big deal. Eating meat that for whatever reason he thought was common is not technically bad, but it's the end result of causing the conscience to be blunted again and again and again. So the next time the situation comes up, it becomes easier to not listen to it. And if he continues down that path, you will destroy the work of the Almighty. I think that's what Paul is communicating here in Romans 14. So now let's take that back to the first century. Clean and common. That's what we're dealing with. So you get these people together, and these people are eating this food. This guy thinks it's common. They're chewing him out because he hasn't come up to the level of faith, of understanding that Christ has said there's nothing common of itself. Paul repeats it. So Paul's writing there and saying, listen, don't get on your brother for this. He still thinks this is common. He thinks it's wrong. It's not wrong, but he thinks it's wrong. Yeshua said it's not wrong, but he thinks it's wrong. And if he does it, he will blunt his conscience and you will be left holding the bag. You will be accountable. This is what I'm thinking is happening in Romans 14 there. Number two is judging improperly. Verse 1. For him that is weak in the faith receive without passing judgment on his opinions. This begs the question. When has the commandments of the Almighty ever been considered opinions? They haven't been considered opinions. The Greek word doesn't even line up in the Septuagint when you go back to Torah to look to see how that stuff fits. There is no conflict. They're not the same thing. I even went and did a short little scavenger hunt to see what I could find about opinions in the first and second century Greek text outside of Scripture. And it pretty much is just, this person has opinion about this, and this person has an opinion about this. Torah does not address it. So you guys get along, please. You know, that type of thing. No judging or criticizing each other over menu selections. You're eating those ribs again? No, that's bad. Who are you to judge another man's servant? These are just the verses that deal with judging. Why are you judging your brother over opinions that Torah does not take a stand on? Why are you doing that? Let us no longer have the habit of judging one another. You know, what can I say about this? If you see a brother or a sister engaging in something, I think the correct procedure is education, a question, not instant condemnation. Personal opinion. I do not choose instant condemnation as my initial response to something that I don't think is right. That's just my personal opinion. Number three, food and what can happen to it prior to it being eaten. We already read this. It doesn't say unclean. Oh man, these people irritate me. It really says common. Has nothing to do with unclean. The whole thing has been twisted up so that we have fraud in translation. And if I did not have self-control, I would be continually angry at these people for printing these texts and then distributing them to people who are trusting them to present the Word of God accurately. It makes me angry, but I do try to contain myself, at least most of the time. Summary of those 3 points. Where have we seen this passage before? 1 Corinthians 13. What does he say? If you have all knowledge, if I have all of my doctrines correct, which we know I don't. Okay, we already know that. But let's just pretend that I have every doctrine correct, and I'm the only person in the world that would have that. But I don't have love. What does that make me? Close to worthless. See, most people are going to die, and they're not going to have all their doctrines correct. We need to keep that in mind when we're talking about the first fruits, the first resurrection. Most people are going to die and they're not going to have every doctrine that could possibly exist correct. They're just not going to have it. It's not a requirement to make the first resurrection. But faith, hope, and love is. The power of the conscience. Yeah, I was thinking about an analogy. I'm not going to give one, but I was going through some different examples of what we could have today that affects conscience. But I'm not going to do it because I'm going to let you do it. Instant condemnation is not the first choice. That's a good place to start. Don't judge. Instead, teach. Discover with the person. Imbue them with information that they can then go and go, okay, I got to look at this, man. You know, I got to process this stuff. Just saying. I'm not saying there's not a place for judging. I'm just saying that maybe instant condemnation is not the first part. Maybe it's down the list. While it's true that Yeshua did away with common, there's no error in observing common. And here's why. Let's take a look at Peter. Peter was the first one sent to the Gentiles, correct? Peter was sent to the Gentiles. Eventually, that got passed off to Paul. But Peter opens the door. Now, what happens? He's going to the Jews. He's going to talk to Jews, and guess what Jews have? They have the Pharisaic badge, which means they recognize common as valid. Common doesn't exist, but they think it exists. So if Peter is going to talk with them, he's going to have to wear the Pharisaic badge. If he's going to wear the badge, he has to acknowledge common as common. 1 Corinthians, it's either 7 or 9, I don't remember which one right now. Paul says that when I'm with the Jews, I'm like with the Jews, or something like that. And that passage is, he was probably doing the common thing. He probably had the Pharisaic badge on. And if they were talking common, he was doing common. He's good with common. If he's over here with the Gentiles, common's no big deal. He chewed out Peter. So we have to figure out, if your outreach is to Jews, then you're probably going to have a different lifestyle than me, whose outreach is to Protestant Christianity. Because I don't have to do the things the Jews do. Today you got to wear a hat. You can't have a blue thread. I'm sure there's some other things that I just don't know. Okay, but the two big ones is you got to wear a hat and you can't have a blue thread. So I don't try to reach out to Jewish people specifically. I reach out to Protestant Christianity. There's no discussion about blue threads or hats. So they have other issues. So I'm just saying, if your ministry is over here, you may have to do common. Otherwise, you're probably okay. Fasting. Fasting's private except for the 10th day of the 7th month. Then it's not private. Then it's public. But see, that includes us. We're good on the 10th day of the 7th month. There's really no debate there. But there are other fasts that you can do. But guess what? You don't have to do them because Torah doesn't require them. They're optional. They're probably wonderful, but you don't have to do them. So don't tell anybody else that they have to do them because they don't. And I'm going to bring up Zechariah in just a second. Zechariah 5, anybody who wants to chase there quickly. All right, here we go, the heart of the matter. How many people remember the Bereans? Acts 17. Probably within the first dozen. Paul is going around teaching something. Protestant Christianity taught me that he was teaching that the law was done away with. So he is saying that the Bereans are, you know, these are good guys. Why? Because they were ready to hear what he had to say, and they searched the scriptures daily to find out if what he said was true. So I ask you, please, taking Torah and the prophets, show me where the law is going to be done away with when Christ comes. Please show me that. Because if it existed, they'd have found it. Because that's exactly what Paul said they did. I just had to put that in there. Oh, it's 17:11. Search the scriptures daily, whether those things that Paul taught were so. I think that's worth consideration. Verse 1. This is my translation. Him that is weak in the faith receive, without passing judgment on opinions that Torah does not address. If Torah does not specifically speak to it, don't argue about it and don't legislate about it. 2. One believes he can eat anything that's food. Another who is weak eats herbs. You know why they eat herbs? I don't know how many of you read the Talmudic references to food, but what they say is that whereas Gentiles could cause food, which is animal meat, to become common, Gentiles could not make fruit and vegetables common. So it guaranteed that if you were in a situation and it was like, oh man, Gentiles have been around here, well, pass me some of that cantaloupe. You're good. No defiling. But the meat can become common. Vegetables, fruit cannot become common. Talmudic reference. Remember that we do not have the education of the first century. Pharisees. If you're raised on common means don't eat it, and your conscience has not been enlightened yet by Yeshua, then what are you going to do? You think you can't eat it. You have to be educated, not condemned. Let not he who can eat anything that is food express contempt toward he that chooses to eat just herbs, for God has received him. You know, it really surprises me that this took place, but I know they had some issues back then. Don't judge or criticize differing opinions. The Torah does not take a specific stand on. I mean, I know I'm going to kill you with that. Who art thou to judge us another man's servant? We already discussed that. Judge with integrity. If you're going to make a judgment, judge with integrity. If you can't do it with integrity when you initially open your mouth, then try a different approach so that we can come to a knowledge of the truth. Isn't that what this is about? We're working toward coming to a knowledge of the truth. We're not working to condemn each other. Doesn't work. 5. One man esteems, I put the word in Greek for those who want to chase it down later. I did. One man esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let every man be persuaded in his own mind. Obviously, if this is related to verse 1's opinions, it cannot be talking about the Sabbath. But we just discussed the problem with Sunday. They got two arguments they can't solve. If you think the fifth day of the week is the best day to propose marriage, then have at it. I put that in there because there were a lot of Gentiles who were coming out of a culture in which there were certain days which was the best day to become engaged, best day to get married, the best day to go fishing, the best day to sleep late. I mean, it was downright ridiculous. If you think that the best day to fast is this day, have at it. Don't call me. I may be cooking ribs that night, so don't put that on me. 6. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord, and he that regardeth not the day to the Lord, he doth not regard it. Textual criticism. That part ain't there. He that eateth to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks, and he that eateth not to the Lord, he eateth not and giveth God thanks. Could this be talking about fasting, people who don't eat? That's just a guess. If you regard today as something special for anything you want, maybe today is the best day to wear a blue shirt. I thought it was. That's why my shirt's blue. No, not really. If you want to fast on day 2 and day 5, have at it. The Pharisees like day 2 and day 5. That record's clear. Hey, but maybe you want to fast on day 4 or day 6. Have at it. Torah doesn't address fasting on 2 and 5 or 4 and 6 or 2 and 6 or 4 and 5. It's not there. It's an opinion. It's not required. Only 7:10 is required. That's the only one that's required. The rest of them, have at it. Now, here's where this gets really fun. Look at this. How many people have heard of the Dedicate? This is an early church document, late 100s, late 1st century, like 80, 90, early 100s, 110s. Nobody really knows, but yeah, it's got a title in the Greek, The Lord's Teaching of the 12 Apostles to the Nations. I highly doubt it, but you know, I'm just saying that's what it says. It opens with the Shema. I thought that was cool. That's kind of interesting, considering the law's been done away with, but that's another discussion. Now, do not in any way forsake the commandments of the Lord. This is in the Dedicate. Do not in any way forsake the commandments of the Lord, but keep what you have received, neither adding thereto nor taking away therefrom. Good golly day. What is this? I thought this thing was done away with at 30 AD. It gets better. Fasting and prayer. How many people read Zechariah 7? You don't have to turn there. We like Zechariah 14 because that's Feast of Tabernacle stuff. Man, we talked that all day. But and Millennial Kingdom. But Zechariah 7 talks about all those fasts. What is happening there? On the surface, you're going to read that and you're going to come away with the Most High is saying, hey, you guys, when you guys fasted, did you fast unto me? And when you guys were chowing down, were you chowing down unto me? And the question is implying a no answer is coming. When you look at the Septuagint Greek text underneath, you'll find a parallel discussion in Romans 14 when he's talking about food unto the Lord. And I was like, oh, man, so here it is. Here is another example of fasting that's not required, and everybody was doing it. They thought that was the thing to do, and nope, wasn't the thing to do. Let not your fast, I'm continuing to dedicate, let not your fast be with the hypocrites. I know, the Gentiles had some attitudes in the late 1st century, early 2nd century with the Jews, and I'm not going to address that now, but this is the text. Let not your fast be with the hypocrites, for they fast on the 2nd and 5th day of the week. The Pharisees fasted on the 2nd and 5th day of the week. See that in Luke too. Rather, fast on the 4th day and the preparation day. I went to the Dedicate text and I pulled up the Greek. And it says the preparation day. Now, that's the 6th day. What are you preparing for? Sunday? You're fasting on the preparation day for Sunday? I don't think so. Here it is. You know, this is like, help me. Wake up, huh? They were fasting on the preparation day. Ouch. Okay. I think we've learned a lot, actually. Verse 14, fraud in translation. I hate it, but it exists. NIV, NAS, they have one translation that is correct. It is not the correct translation. Matthew 15 and Mark 7, context. If you don't have context, you have proof text. Proof text is a problem. We are not teaching a doctrine of demons because we don't forbid people to marry. Look at this group here. Peter interpreted this thing himself. No, he said, God told me, don't call any man common. Romans 14 is dealing with these issues. Common, fasting, conscience, and judgment. It has nothing to do with recognizing the Sabbath has been replaced by Sunday or that all things are now clean. Has nothing to do with that whatsoever. We have gone through and torn down every single support for Protestant Christian interpretation and translation, and we have exposed the fraud where it existed. There is no place left to stand on this island. It is done. And that is all. Thank you. It's break time for the next 30 minutes. If you have questions, come up and see me.